Well, it's still the Padded Room Podcast, and I'm still Darian, with you again, as usual. What's going on, peoples? How was your week this week? Better than mine, I hope. Do I still sound a little verklempty, a little nasally? Allergies are still banging. Had that big wedding we talked about last night. I did okay. I managed to stay outside most of the night, but still plenty of cat hair running around, even the outside of that place, I came to understand. Apparently cat hair doesn't just stick to clothing and upholstery and such. It also gets in grass and trees and dirt and shit. So yeah, that's why I sound a little verklempty. I might actually be getting a cold too. I don't know. I mean, I shouldn't be. The weather's still pretty nice out. What's the weather like out there with you guys? Pretty nice, I hope. I think we're sitting at about 80 right now here in Reno. Not bad. Not bad business at all. Had a little bit of a weird experience. Would you like to hear about it? I'm going to tell you about it anyway, you assholes. So I'm at the gas station the other day. You guys are probably going to think I'm making this up. I'll tell you right now, but I'm not. This actually happened. I'm at the gas station the other day, filling up my truck, getting ready to go to my sister-in-law's house to choke to death on cat hair. And I'm filling up the truck. Out of nowhere, I hear some very familiar voices. And there's a couple of yahoos somewhere talking about horror movies. And I'm thinking to myself, wait, what the fuck is... I know these guys. I turn around, and it's a buddy of mine playing this here podcast with the volume cranked up to like 25. And he's got a shit-eating grin on his face, too. Dude, don't be... All right. I think I've put this disclaimer out there before, but if you actually know me, work with me, are related to me, or in any way see me on a regular basis, please don't listen to this podcast. Find something else. Don't waste your time with this, all right? Chances are I'm going to make fun of you at some point, and then you're going to get your feelings hurt, and then you're not going to talk to me anymore. No, it's good times, though. That's kind of neat, right? You hear yourself at the gas station? Kind of makes me feel like I've arrived. If it wasn't my buddy, I would really be excited. Because then I'd be like, hey, there's a complete stranger listening to my dipshit show. But it's just my buddy that I work with, Tim. So, Tim, thanks for listening. Which brings me to another point. Our new listener, Tim, I discovered, likes to listen to this show while he's at work. Well, I think you know what that means, inmates. I think old Timmy needs a little work time motivation, don't you? I agree. Whoa, Timmy. Whoa, Timmy. All right, Tim, it's all up to you, buddy. We got a jackpot in Fallon. We got two machines down out in Fernley. We got that big fat guy out at Gardnerville that wants his money right now, Tim. Right now. It's all up to you, buddy. Chuck wants to go home early, and I'm not coming in for another 3 hours. It's all up to you. Let's do it, Timmy! Woo! Tim! 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 Oh, that's good times. I love giving people the work time motivation, right? Why wouldn't you do that? That's awesome. Somebody would give me some work time motivation. I get to drive around listening to fucking top 40 hits all night like an asshole. That was for Timmy. I'm driving around out in Reno right now. Probably listening to this, probably not. I don't know. Oh, what else is going on here? I got a bunch of in-laws staying at my house again. I'm just sneaking this show in. I think they're all out to lunch right now. So I may have to wrap this one a little short because they're coming back here and they're staying in the room that I actually podcast from. Which means as I sit here looking around the room, surrounded by a lot of weird luggage. What else we got over here? We got some strange prescription bottles. Wonder what those are for. Some old lady panties. Yeah. Oh, God damn it. Am I a psycho? Be honest with me. Am I? If I am, then somebody should tell me and I'll get professional help. But I can literally go decades without seeing or hearing from anybody in my family at all. and not even worry about it. They don't come looking for me. I don't go looking for them. Not a fucking problem. My wife, on the other hand, has like a 2.5 month grace period. And if somebody isn't coming in, then she's got to go see somebody, and they talk on the phone like 5 times a day for an hour each time. I don't understand it, dude. I mean, I get it. I know they're in a close-knit family, but fuck, it's only been a couple of hours. You haven't missed anything, I swear. If something happens in my family, unless the police are notifying me or some random coroner's office out there, they're probably not going to bother me with it. Because it doesn't fucking matter. You know what I mean? All right, I'm going off on a tangent now. Hey, you guys don't tune into this podcast to listen to me complain about horse shit. You want to know about horror movies and stuff, don't you? Yeah, you do. Well, good, because I feel like talking about them. How about a little horror news? How's that sound for you this early in the morning? I'm recording this at like 4 p.m, I should tell you that. And I am a little tired, and I got a little touch of the hangover, because like I said, I was at a wedding last night. Dude, my new brother-in-law, he makes these crazy shots. They're fucking delicious, and they're dangerous, though. What you do, you get, it's like a coffee-flavored Patron, and then you throw a splash. It looks like it almost looks like Guinness. You know what I mean? It's all dark. You throw that into a shot glass, and then you just give a little dab of Bailey's Irish Cream on top of that. Dude, I'll drink a pitcher of that shit, and it'll probably give me the squirts and a gnarly hangover, but it's fucking good, man. I'm telling you. You got to watch out for it. All right, horror news.
Horror news.
Yeah. What do we got here? Oh, excuse me. A little gassy for you. Looks like Warner Brothers may be rebooting I Am Legend. Now, we've seen a couple incarnations of this particular film over the years. Started, I believe, with Vincent Price in a movie called The Last Man on Earth. Went into Charlton Heston and the Omega Man. And then I think there was another one. But then the last installment was Will Smith in I Am Legend. It's all based on the same Richard Mathis book called I Am Legend. But it's the same thing. No Will Smith in this one. So we got that going for us. Unless you're a Will Smith fan, then fuck off. You know, I think I could handle that. Another I Am Legend. I wasn't mad at the first one. When I saw it the first time, I was like, well, these vampires look a little cartoony, and I don't know what the fuck is going on here. And, I got a problem with dog trauma, I'll be honest with you. But I didn't think it was a bad show. I got a little sappy there towards the end. From what I understand, the most of those three films, the three incarnations of this book, the Vincent Price one is supposed to be the closest to the source material. So hopefully they'll get closer to that. I mean, the vampires in I Am Legend were pretty wonky, right? I mean, they're like albino and they're pretty cartoony, but at the same time, what was that, 2006, I think, 2007? So, I don't know what we had going on CGI-wise back then, but I think we could have done better than that. I mean, come on, dude. Seriously. Get it together, Will Smith, with your shitty vampires. What else we got here? Ooh, here's some exciting news. David Callahan and Ruben Fleischer have just been hired by Sony to go into production on a Zombieland prequel. How does that sound to you? I like the Zombieland. That's a good show. I don't usually do the horror comedies because usually the comedy is just adolescent. But I thought that one was pretty good. I never got a chance to check out that Zombieland TV pilot, but I heard nothing good about it. They haven't gone into details as to whether or not they're going to bring any of the original group back. Probably not, because they're all super mega stars now, right? You got Woody Harrelson, He's a true detective. Eisenberg is the founder of Facebook, and then those two chicks, I don't know what they're doing, but they're big stuff out there, doing stuff, you know, acting and thespianism and such. What else have we got here? Toronto After Dark Film Fest. This is where you want to go if you want to know which horror movies are going to kick ass in the next 2 to 3 years. Some festival award winners in the past have included Antiviral, which is a kick-ass movie. We covered it on this show. American Mary, which is a bad motherfucker, and you can beat off to it if you really want to. Looks like they've announced their 2014 lineup, though. They've got Dead Snow 2. Everybody's looking forward to that. If you haven't seen the first Dead Snow, that's where you want to go for Nazi zombies. Now, you don't want to get pigeonholed into one particular kind of Nazi zombie. You want a nice plethora, like a variety. So if you're in the mood for Nazi zombies, I say Dead Snow, because you'll get a nice cornucopia there of, you know, undead anti-Semites. you don't want to get bottlenecked into one particular style of Nazi zombie. Housebound, I'm not sure what that's about. The Babadook, we've heard a lot about that one. I think that one had something to do with a demonic children's book and the bringing something from out of the bed, underneath the bed. I don't know what that is. Wormwood, don't know what that is either. And here's one that I'm very interested in. It's called Why Horror. W-H-Y Horror. And this one is just a documentary kind of delving into the psychological well-being, I guess, of extreme horror fans. I don't know why I wasn't contacted by the producers of this film. I mean, I'm sitting in my guest room talking to myself, surrounded by old lady underwear right now. What else do you want to know about me and my state of affairs at this moment? I'm talking to myself. All right, fuck off. I'm going off on a tangent again. I think what I'm going to do from now on this show is tweet somebody before I start the show, and then put like one of those electric dog collars on myself so they can just zap me when I start going off on something stupid. Anyway, I'm looking forward to that last one, the Why Horror. I think that'll be interesting. Or wildly insulting. Could be either one. Horror fans in general are not, you know, we're not thought of as the upper crest of society generally. I don't see why not. I'm doing just fine for myself. I'm talking to old lady underwear right now. Oh, I think I know. I think that one's going in the show notes, my friends. Maybe after the in-laws leave. I don't know. What else do we have here? Posters for Brian Bertino's Mockingbird are up on Bloody Disgusting. Do you remember this guy, Brian Bertino? You may remember him from a little movie called The Strangers. Scott Speedman and Liv Tyler, great fucking show, right? The home invasion thing kicked ass. Wildly atmospheric, too, with all the crazy kids music and getting shot down on the marriage proposal. And then comes these fucking assholes with their cutesy face masks and swinging axes at people. Good stuff. This Mockingbird, though, sounds pretty good, too. Let me give you a little brief synopsis of what I read. Three families living in the same neighborhood. Each one of them is given a camcorder or a recording camera, record video, and they're told to start filming and not to stop filming, and if they do stop filming, their families will be put in danger somehow. And it's found footage, this one too, so that'll be interesting. Looks good, sounds good. I'm very interested in this, Mockingbird. Don't have a release date for you, though, on that one, only the posters. And if you look at the poster, there's a guy in a clown mask. I don't know how that ties into anything, but you know me. I'm a sucker for crazy clowns. Lastly, Indiegogo has partnered with Bloody Disgusting to help fund independent horror films. That's pretty badass, dude. That's good times. This Bloody Disgusting business, they got a lot of money, and they're already in the horror business, so it's kind of like them giving back to the horror community. I'm pretty psyched for that. I think that there's a lot of very interesting filmmakers out there, you know, doing stuff that isn't really getting the recognition it deserves. I think this is going to bring a lot more of that to the forefront. And I know some people that know some people that might be interested in getting involved in the independent film community. And possibly getting snobby and hipster on me, too. I don't know. Does that make you a douchebag or a hipster? If you start advertising to people that you're an independent filmmaker, do you have to start wearing like one of those college professor jackets with the elbow pads? Because I feel like anybody that I meet that is claiming to be anywhere near, on, or around the film industry kind of goes into hipster territory to an annoying level very quickly. And I'm not talking about Josh. Everybody's probably, what are you talking shit about Josh? I'm not talking about Josh. There are other people that I know that I have met that dip right into the hipster fuckface genre of guys that I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about. Where's that shock collar when I need it? Jesus Christ. Alrighty, that's all I got on the horror news. It's pretty exciting stuff there. How about a little listener mail, huh? See what you people have to say to me. Are you talking to me? Are you talking to me?
Listener mail.
Booyah. See what we got going on here. The usual smorgasbord of emails, voicemails, tweets, and otherwise hate speak. Started off with Kevin, my main man in Japan. See what Kevin has to say. Subject line, cheap thrills and antisocial. Hey, Darian, regarding baby poop, you should appreciate that fragrance. Oh, let's just do baby poop from now on, right? I mean, it's kind of cute, really. Regarding baby poop, you should appreciate that fragrance while your baby is on his milk and the formula diet. Once he starts eating other food, the poop really starts to stink. When they only drink milk, it's not so smelly. You'll see what I mean in a few months. You know, this is some advice I could have used, I don't know, about a year ago before we decided to pull the goalie. Oh, it's a good time though, right? I mean, that's part of being a parent. You got to clean the shit up. You got to get pooped on once or twice. Dude, he nailed me a good one. I was about to go to work. I got it in my work clothes the other day. My wife says, here, just hold him real quick. I'm going to do something. And I'm like, all right. And kaboom. I think we had a faulty diaper or something, because it like shot out the side and went right up my chest. It was fucking amazing. It's like almost like a poop slide or something. I don't know. Kevin goes on. I've seen Cheap Thrills, thought it was pretty good concept, but was taken too far about 3/4 of the way through. Their action stopped being realistic and dipped into ridiculous behavior. Yeah. I see what you're saying there, Kev, but I mean, you got to ask yourself, when you're watching a movie like that, you got to ask yourself, what is your price, right? I think that's kind of the point of that movie. Like towards the end there, I think Koechner offers him like $25,000 to chop off a pinky. And then they start lowballing each other. I think Pat Healy gets it down to like 12,000, and then he does it. And then Koechner throws out like another 50,000 to whoever eats the pinky. Spoiler alert: pinkies will be eaten. It's, you know, but I mean, think about it, dude. If you're in the position of that character and you're facing tenant eviction. Oh, excuse me. And you need 4,500 quick, and this dude's dropping, you know, 25K on you. Maybe you could lose a digit. You know, you got a wife and kid. You can't hold down a job, as Pat Healy's character couldn't. Maybe you lose the fucking pinky. Just saying. Food for thought, Kevin. That's all it is. And I sincerely hope, Kevin, that you never find yourself in a position where you need to sell off one of your digits. I would go with the, not the pinky, but the one next to it. What is that finger called? The index? Or the one that you never do anything with? You know what I mean? It's like the, if you're doing this, the shocker sign, it's the one that goes down. I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about. Also, watched Antisocial recently. And yeah, I'm going to have to agree with other people. It's kind of a ripoff of or heavily inspired by Pontypool. But Pontypool has done better as far as the buildup of suspense goes. Tall Man versus Chrome Skull. Vote goes to Tall Man. Yeah, I figured it would. Predators versus Demons. Predators have the tech advantage. Vote goes to Predators. You got it, dudes. Kevin, a.k.a. Lonely Bob. Hey, thanks for writing in, Kev. See who's up next here. It's our old buddy, Ermagoosh. Ermagoosh. Subject line, Brenna Cross Country Race, Terradome Transformers 4. Didn't catch immersion therapy as the long-awaited, apparently I'm the only one who loves this Transformers 4 hit Blu-ray. Who else is there anybody else out there that's still watching the Transformers movies? I gave up after the second one. I watched the first one. I'll be honest with you. I was pleasantly surprised because I thought that, you know, Shia LaBeoufy could actually do some acting. Before that, he was just the kid from Even Stevens, right? And now he's out blowing things up and stuff. So I was like, oh, look at this guy. He's actually doing all right. And then Transformers came and took a big steaming dump right on my chest. And that's it. You're done, Transformers. I'm not going to let you burn me again. And I have not seen another Transformers movie since then. So there's my two cents on the Transformers. Apparently Gersh is into it. Fucking loved it. I know it's not horror. Sue me. To all the haters of it, go fuck yourself. By that, he's talking to me. Terradome, Tall Man over Chrome Skull. You got it. Demons over Predators. Hey, now. Things heating up over in the teams division. Company of Wolves. Brenna's second cross-country race is Tuesday. Can we get some motivation for her? I'm out. Deuces. What? Can we get some motivation for Brenna, too? Two padded room motivations in the same episode? It's never been done before. I don't know, guys. I mean, I might have to run this up the chain of command or something. Fuck it. Let's do it. All right, Brenna, here we go, babe. You got about a mile or so to go, kid. It's all up to you. I don't know what your time last year was, but I know this year it's going to be faster than last year. That's all that fucking It's all that matters, Brenna. And if your dad is actually letting you listen to this, then sorry about the F-bomb I just dropped. But I want to see some speed. I want to see some endurance. I don't want to see you walking until you hit that finish line, Brenna. That's all there is to it. It's all up to you, babe. It's all up to you. Woo-hoo! See, as it turns out, I actually am the chain of command of this here podcast. So whatever I say goes. And I say Brenna and my buddy Tim can both get motivation in the same episode. That's how we roll here in the padded room. Who's up next? Kevin, coming in again. Doubling down this kid from Japan. Listen to him. Subject line, the incident, a.k.a. Asylum Blackout. Hey, Darian, just watched a great film called The Incident from 2011, sometimes renamed as Asylum Blackout, depending on the region. Anyhow, short plot synopsis, a few band members work part-time preparing food in the kitchen of an insane asylum. On a stormy night, there's a blackout and things get way out of control. Now, you've seen plenty of times zombies wandering around an insane asylum or the ghosts of insane asylum prisoners, but damn, these guys are pretty scary and they're still alive. You could categorize it as a suspense drama, but there's definitely some gory and dark moments, so it could easily be categorized as a horror film in my opinion. Just want to let you know about this little-known Canadian flick. Check it out if you get a chance. Kevin, a.k.a. Lonely Bob. Yeah, Kevin, I've seen Asylum. Well, all right. I've seen like 80% of Asylum Blackout. It was on cable. Here in the States, they still call it Asylum Blackout. It's actually, he's right, it is actually a pretty good show. I would definitely call it a horror film because there's Dude, I mean, just think about it. You're trapped in a mental institution with a bunch of loonies. And they're like the violent kind, too. They're looking to jack somebody up. From what I saw, it's a great show. I've never made it all the way through the film, though. I have to be honest with you. I caught the ending in, like, most of the first half. And I just keep running into it on cable. So I just pick it up wherever it is and watch what I can. From what I saw, great show. The band members were a little flaky, but that doesn't take anything away from the story or anything. The psychos in this movie are fucking, they're looking to jack somebody up. There's an actor that plays like the head of the psychos, and I can't recall his name, but he's like a skinny, kind of a greasy white guy, and you just look at him and he makes you feel dirty. You know what I mean? He looks like somebody that should be selling methamphetamine or something like that. He was in Doom with The Rock. He was in Batman Begins. He played the guy that shot Bruce Wayne's parents. You'd know him if you saw him. He's got like pockmarks and stuff, but he makes a pretty good psycho. And I'm with Kevin on this one, man. I haven't seen it all the way through, but I know for the most part how it goes down. Pretty good show. I guess in Japan they call it The Incident. Stateside, it's Asylum Blackout. You can probably catch that on Redbox or maybe Netflix. Very cool, Kevin. I'm with you on the Asylum Blackout type of thing there. Up next, Sean G, my main man at Angry Gnome Comics. Dude, what are you doing looking at comic books and not going to Angry Gnome Comics for all your horror comic needs? Don't be an asshole, all right? Sean here just picked up the rights to the Puppet Master franchise. He's fucking putting concept art up at on the Facebook there. Don't be a dickhead. Go get you some horror comics. Jesus Christ. How many times I got to tell you people? That was probably the angriest commercial you've ever heard in your life. Alrighty, Sean G. Subject line, random stuff. Way too much going on over here. That's good to hear, because that means Sean's making some kick-ass comic books for us. I've been behind on shows and lost my notes, so I'm just going to have to wing it. Baby poop sucks. I managed to never get directly shit on, but have been peed on many times. We're getting into potty training now, so that could all change soon. Now, Sean's got himself a little girl, and I wonder if the... Because I've been peed on also on multiple occasions in the nursery there. I wonder if the genitalia changes the dynamic of the baby pee array. Because I know... Well, all right. Shock caller! The Mist is a badass movie. I remember Stephen King's It being a damn good movie as well. But I guess since I don't have time to watch a 3-plus-hour movie, I don't have to worry about the memory of it getting sullied by a rewatch. I don't recall the context it was brought up in, but The Rage was one of Stephen King's published, well, it was one of the books Stephen King published as Richard Bachman. It's about a school shooting, so King had it pulled from previous publications after Columbine, or one of those other school shootings. Excuse me. So, there are a couple of copies out there, but I don't know how easy it is to get a hold of. Yeah, I had a long conversation with Gersh and Alan about that. Yeah, I get it. I mean, I suppose that's one thing that you kind of have to be careful of if you're going to be an author or any kind of a prolific public figure, and that's inspiring people to acts of great violence. I don't think anybody intends to do it, but, you know, in 2014, how do you not, almost? You know what I mean? Rap music, torture porn, regular porn, and pretty much anything you can see on any social media anywhere could conceivably inspire somebody to go, you know, hit somebody with a shovel or something, or worse, right? So I don't know how you get around that, man. But I don't know that pulling it from shelves is the way to go either, because that kind of feels like censorship. I mean, I guess if it's his decision, it's technically is his property, but I don't know. Whatever you want to do there, Steven. I know I'm in the minority, but I'm going Chrome Skull over the Tall Man. Wow, Chrome Skull, finally on the board. All right, Sean, if that's what you want to do. In teams, the Predators would take out the Demons. Woo, buddy. Things are heating up in the teams division. That's all I can remember, so I'm signing off. Good luck with the secret project, Sean. Hey, thanks, Sean. Thanks for writing in. And good luck with your Puppet Master project there, fella. Can't wait to see what he's doing with that. Dude, the concept art looks pretty kick-ass. That I can tell you. Let's see what we got on the old voicemail line here. I don't know who this is, but it's got to be either GP or Alan, right? Let's see what this guy says.
Yeah, it's GP. I think I got GP'd early. I think I restarted this thing. I don't know, whatever. But I was just going to say that I didn't hate it.
Wasn't that great?
Wasn't mad at it, but I was very disappointed in it.
If you probably read the book.
The book is far better than that movie, and definitely should read it. And that's all I'm going to say about that. For Terradome, I will take Tall Man over Chrome Skull.
Got it.
And take Predators. Demons are just another skull for the Predators to collect.
Oh, GP.
And they'll get it. So I will take Predators over the Demons. Now,
that's your horse,
therapy,
by the way.
Torment.
What do you think of that?
It was all right.
It wasn't bad.
You get to see, like, Catherine Isabelle's side boobs. You get to see her boobs through a shower curtain. So, yeah, that was worth the watch.
Boobs in there. I'll take it.
Then I wasn't quite sure what the hell was going on, because I don't know why they went after the kid. I mean, I know why they went for the older one in the beginning, apparently because she wanted it. I don't know.
Well, she hated her parents.
But why did they go after the little kid the next house over when they weren't even there? To start with, they just moved there,
right?
I didn't get it.
Well,
don't understand it. I mean, it was okay. It was, you know, home invasion kind of thing.
Yeah,
nothing that we didn't see before, but
that's
it. I'm off to Monster Mania. I will talk to you all later.
Son
Bye.
Of a bitch is at Monster Mania. Is he? I wonder if he is calling us from Monster Mania, because that pissed me right off. With the immersion therapy there, Torment, I was under the impression that they were trying to indoctrinate the little kid into their family. Because if you noticed, they got the kid, and then when the dad and Catherine Isabel went after him, they kept referring to him as little brother instead of whatever his name was. That kid was kind of a punk ass, though, right? He's being pretty dicky to Catherine Isabel, who's just there to, you know, be a stepmom. But, I don't know, I guess that's what you do with step-parents. You have to be a dick to them. Is that how it works? I don't know. I never had any. Not a bad show. Torment. Little Catherine Isabel naked in the shower there, but you don't really get to see anything. I mean, believe me, I slowed it down and looked at it from a few different angles, hoping to catch a nipple in there somewhere. It's not happening. It's not happening. But these are not stunt boobs this time. I.e. Freddy versus Jason. Catherine, you pulled the wool over my penis once, my dear. You're not going to do it again. That I can tell you. I'll tell it to her face. I don't care. Yeah, it wasn't bad. I mean, just another run-of-the-mill home invasion type of thing. Kind of creepy with there is a little bit of a twist there at the end, but we'll get into that in immersion therapy. Well, thanks for calling in from fucking Monster Mania, GP. That must be, like, right down the street from his house, because he goes every year, and every year he sends us pictures and calls us from Monster Mania and does cool stuff like that. Makes me a little jealous. A little jealous, GP. I hope you're happy. If that was GP, this must be Alan right here.
Added room, what's up? Yeah, I had just woken up last night, or last time. Anyway, Terradome picks.
What you got?
I'm going to go with Chrome Skull.
Hey!
And no way. I'm going to go with the Tall Man.
Okay.
Yeah, Tall Man and Predators.
God damn it.
That's all I got. Y'all have a good one.
Bye. Beautiful. You're locked in, Alan. Tall Man and the Predators. You know, I'll tell you, I put some serious thought into taking the Tall Man as my horse this year. I think he could go places. You know, he's got a reach advantage with those fucking balls that he throws at you. He's strong, right? He's throwing coffins around like they're nothing. He could go somewhere. I don't know who he's got next, but he could make something happen here. That was it for the voicemails. Let's check the tweety tweet tweet line. Tweeter tweet tweet tweet. What do we got here? Hey, Crease. At Crease PC coming in. It's our old friend Crease. At Padded Room Pod taking Chrome Skull. Alrighty. And Predators. God damn it. That was a close one for a minute. All right, Crease, you're locked in. It's not very close now, but there you have it. That's it for the voicemails. How about we go ahead and get into a little movie action? What do you say to that there, inmates? Let's do it.
The Embalmer. Monster of the deep, with a blood-chilling pattern for murder. Submerging with his victims into the fathomless canals which interlace the city. One of them hides the grisly secret of a madman. The secret that is finally exposed in a flood of action, terror, and suspense that spell the Embalmer. She Beast.
Yeah, buddy. Okay, all right. So allow me to explain before you start unsubscribing and deleting. Last month we did Stephen King month. Pretty good stuff, right? So, you can't have good horror without bad horror. You can't have a yin without a yang. You can't appreciate somebody like Stephen King without trudging through the crap at the bottom of the barrel. All that being said, I am proud to present to you Public Domain Month. Yeah, why not, dude? We'll do a whole month of public domain movies. How bad could it possibly be? You'll find out in a second. Public domain movies. Shall I explain? Does everybody know what public domain is? Let me explain this. What happens is when a movie is made, there are certain licensing agreements and franchise fees and things like that that have to be paid on an annual basis in order for the studio or the filmmakers or whoever to maintain the rights to that film. Now, if those fees aren't paid on a regular basis, then those movies slip into what's called public domain. Basically, those movies become public property. And if they're public property, that means that anybody can show them at any time, anywhere, charge whatever they want. They can take the movies and splice themselves into it. They can do their own voiceovers. They're basically free to do whatever the fuck you want to do with these movies. They're public property. So have at it. Whatever you want to do. I don't know. Now, the reason we come to understand these movies is because, well, speaking for myself, you find these public domain box sets. You find them at Walmart, Best Buy. They're all over the fucking place. And what they are is you get like 50 movies for like $10. And they're not the best movies, but there's 50 fucking movies for $10. All kinds of movies. I always go for the horror ones, obviously, but they have Western box sets, World War II box sets. It's probably like some romance fucking shit. I don't know, but I always buy the horror ones, and they're, you know, every now and then you go sorting through these box sets looking for something to watch on a Saturday night when you're about to pass out. You run into a gem here and there. It does happen. What's that one that me and Josh did? The fucking Dark Messiah? That's public domain. You can get that in one of these goddamn box sets. So you never know. You know, we just might hit a nerve with one of these things. So that's what I'm doing this month, and you guys are just going to have to bear with me while I do it. So, for this week, I'm covering The Embalmer from 1965. This one's in black and white, starring Maureen Brown, Luigi Martucci, and Alcide Gazzetto. Directed by Dino Tavella and written by Paolo Lombardo. Now, this one, I believe, could be categorized as a giallo. It's Italian, it's set in Venice, Italy, and it's dubbed over in English. The general content is more of a crime thriller. This is really pre-Dario Argento or Lamberto Bava giallo, so this one probably doesn't get brought up a lot in the giallo conversation. Does everybody know what a giallo is, or do I need to explain that too? All right, I'll drop the giallo knowledge on you while I'm at it. Break out your textbooks, kids. We're getting deep here. Giallo is Italian for yellow. And the reason giallo is used to describe this particular subgenre of horror film is because just after World War II, there was a huge influx in Italy of these pulp fiction novels. I don't know if they were graphic novels or just regular novels, but they were kind of sordid and, they always involved some crazed sex killer and he's jacking hot chicks and there's some kind of a psychic or a detective that's going to track him down. There was a long-standing theme in these things that the killer had to wear black leather gloves. That's gone away in the meantime. The reason they're called yellows or giallos is because these books all had a yellow binding. And when you'd go to the bookstore, you'd go to the giallo section. It was kind of like the porn section. And you'd see just these shelves full of these yellow-bound books. And that's how you knew you were in the right spot. Now, as this pertains to film, you'll notice your Dario Argentos, your Lamberto Bavas, this dude, Dino Tavella. You know, they're... A lot of sort of crime suspense type horror films came out of that region circa mid-60s to even into the 80s, really. Notable names would be Tenebrae, Torso, Bird with the Crystal Plumage, Stendhal Syndrome. I mean, there's a shit ton of them, man. But you'll notice that these aren't... I mean, they're considered horror films, but for the most part, they're... more like in the crime suspense region. I mean, there's, you get some slasher action and, there's hot chicks getting shot and stabbed and stuff. And some of them still do the black leather gloves thing. Some of them don't. And then there's usually some MacGuffin at the end where you find out that the killer is actually the best friend of the guy or whoever. Now, technically, this movie, The Embalmer, could fit in the giallo subcategory, I believe. Italian, more of a crime suspense film. It is in black and white. It's 1965. I'd probably call it a giallo. It's a little bit pre-Argento and Bava, but it still fits the subtext pretty well. Our story, or lack thereof, actually, picks up in some kind of a catacomb somewhere in Venice, Italy. And basically all you have is a guy in a hooded robe, kind of monk-esque, and he's got a dead chick on a slab, and he's talking to her, and he's explaining, stuff to her. She appears to be dead, even though her eyes are open. He shoots her up with something, and then begins what appears to be an embalming process. He's draining her blood. It's in black and white, so you have to assume it's blood. He's draining her of something and pumping something else into her. As he's, telling her how beautiful she is and everything, he kind of walks away from her for a second, and then we get a reveal of a cabinet-esque operation along one wall, which basically he's just got these dead chicks like set up in the cabinet. Imagine if you had like a six pack of those real sex dolls, those ones that are like $6,000, and you just had like a locker thing set up where you could have Nancy in this one and Barbara in that one and Bianca in this one. I don't know if I ever actually get one of those sex dolls, I don't know what I'm going to name her, but it's become apparent to me that when they send you one, they're pre-named, and I think that's horse shit. If you're paying $6,000 to fuck one of these things, you should get to give her your own name. Shot caller! This guy's got a bunch of dead chicks in this weird cabinet thing is what I'm getting at here, people. All right, that's kind of creepy. It kind of wraps up with this guy donning some scuba gear and then kind of... getting into the water there in Venice. Now, if you don't know Venice, Italy, it's like a
it's a city, but it's all on the water, so they don't have streets. They have canals. So, you know, I would not want to get drunk in Venice, Italy. I'll tell you why. I have a bad habit of getting drunk and then just wandering out into the street. I mean, I don't go fight any... Well, I don't get into too much trouble. I usually just walk home or whatever. But there is a lot of street wandering going on. And I feel like if I got hammered in Venice, Italy, I'd probably drown pretty quick. I wonder if they have sharks in Venice. You wouldn't think so, because that's like a whole other level of traffic right there, right? I don't know. I don't know about the sharks. Anyway, this dude gets into some scuba gear, and then he takes off. And then we get the opening credits, and then the embalmer. And then from there, we cut back to a young lady. Once the title screen is done, we cut to a young lady who is presumably walking home from a date. She kisses her date goodbye, and then just kind of walks through the fucking canal ways of Venice, or whatever you call them. Oh, excuse me. Then we see this Scuba Steve character. He kind of jumps out from some pillars in the shadows, and really all he does is kind of grab her around the waist and put his hand over her mouth. Cut to him splashing back into the canal way, and then that's all we see of him. That's the last we see of that particular young lady, too, for right now. From there, we cut to this reporter guy. His name's Andreas. This guy's a stone fucking pimp, dude. For real. Now, I don't know how things actually go in Venice, Italy. I've never been there. But apparently, from the way this film made it look, if you're a dude and you're living in Venice, Italy, all you do all day long is fuck tourist chicks. That's it. That's all you gotta do. Take a 15-minute break to get drunk periodically. But for the most part, you wait for them there at the airport or the bus stop. They get off. You stroll up there with your Italian accent, offer to show them around. Before you know it, you're getting blown in a dark alleyway. So I don't know if you need to speak Italian to do that. I've looked into airfare to Venice, Italy. It's very expensive. But I don't know. My wife doesn't listen to this podcast. That's all I'm going to say. Anyway. Andreas the reporter, this apparently has been an ongoing pandemic in Venice, the disappearance of these young ladies. This is only like the third one, but he's catching on to a pattern here. And he's talking to his reporter friends about it and the editor of his paper. And, you know, the police get called whenever one of these chicks comes up missing. But the commissioner of the police is a real fuckface, and he's not too interested in doing his job. He just wants to write all these disappearances off as chicks going on eloping with lovers or getting drunk and falling in the canal way and probably drowning. They'll probably wash up down the road somewhere, something like that. So he's not putting too much of an emphasis on actually investigating these things. But my man Andreas is, and he's noticing a pattern and he's getting wise to what's going on. So that happens. He's kind of talking to his reporter friends. He's leaving the newspaper office there, and he has these two drunk friends that are always fighting with each other. I don't know exactly what these guys do. I think they're like baggage handlers or something like that. Because they, like all the other dudes there in Venice, just hang out there by the bus stop, wait for chicks to get off, and they offer to take their bags to their hotel, and then they probably get boned in the dark alleyway there, like you should. So he's talking to these guys, and these guys are both drunk, and, you know, they're a couple of goofballs, and they're like, hey, if you come down here to the alleyway around 10 o'clock at night, there's a fish that swims up and down with a lamp on its head. And he's like, yeah, okay, you drunk assholes. As he's standing there talking to these two knuckleheads, a bus pulls up with a class of European girls, like some kind of a college class or something like that. So, Andreas, being the opportunist that he is, he just strolls right up to him, asks if he can be of any assistance. 5 to 15 minutes later, he's banging the professor there. Fucking Italians, dude. God damn it. Why didn't we ever decide that Irishmen were sexy? I'm an Irishman. I'd like to have sex with some students from time to time. Come on. Anyway, basically what this class is there in Venice to do is to investigate the sinking of Venice. Now, I don't know if this is true or not, but I have heard this theory before that Venice, Italy is actually sinking below the waterline. So what they're there to do is to try to find this underground tunnel system that should show the correct amount of water erosion that would allow them to date just how much Venice has sank over the years. I'm paraphrasing this whole fucking thing because I don't remember that much about this movie, but that's basically the gist of what I got. The class is all chicks. There's all chicks except for one guy, and that's the professor's brother. He happens to be there. He's like the map guru. He's got all the maps of all the old waterways. He's going to get to the bottom of this sinking city shit, and he's going to, you know, write some kind of a paper or something like that. And oddly enough, a little on the asexual side, because he's not trying to fuck any of these girls. Every time you see this guy, he's smoking and looking at maps. All right, you're clearly gay. That's it. That's all there is to it. Yeah, maybe he should be trying to get on Andreas. I don't know. These Italians, you never know. Things are going relatively smoothly. From there, we get another cutscene to the weird hooded guy. He's got the previous chick embalmed and shot up with whatever, and she's now in the cabinet. He's in his black robe and hood, and he's walking around telling these two dead chicks how beautiful they are. And then, of course, he dons the Scuba Steve outfit and hits the road. From there, we get another chick minding her own business. She gets fucking chloroformed or whatever it exactly it is he does. I don't know. It doesn't really show. But basically, he swipes another chick, takes her down to this subterranean area. Same thing happens with her. Embalmment into the sex doll cabinet, and that's where you are. Okay, so while that's happening, we have like a little love story happening between Andreas and the professor of this class. He's taking her and all of her students out to dinner. We get a weird a weird situation here at dinner. It's like a restaurant, but it's more like a restaurant / nightclub. They're sitting there having dinner. All of a sudden, the lights in the restaurant go out. All the waiters start lighting candles and taking them up to like a center stage area. Now, on the center stage is basically a coffin sitting upright against the wall. I don't know. This weirds everybody out. Apparently, the coffin wasn't there before the lights went out. I don't know. The coffin door flies open, and out pops miniature Elvis Presley. And he starts banging away on a guitar and singing stuff in Italian. I don't know what he's singing about, but chicks got into it, I guess. They really like this miniature Elvis guy. So that's kind of creepy. I mean, it's not. It's just dinner entertainment more than anything else. But that goes on. That's fun. More with the love story. After dinner, he takes the girls to go check into their hotel. Now, this is where things get really weird. All the girls are supposed to be staying on the third floor of this hotel. As he's checking them all in and getting their passports and everything going, one of the hotel clerks kind of keeps staring at one of the girls. And then when it's her turn to check in, he checks her into a specific room on the first floor. He tells her that they're out of rooms on the third floor, but as soon as one comes available, they'll move her up there and so on and so forth. Now, I don't have to tell you, you probably already did the math, but there's a two-way mirror in that fucking room that he checked her into, and he's going to go down there later and beat off while she's taking a shower. Fucking creepy hotel guy is what it is, dude. The guy's in Venice, Italy. He obviously speaks Italian. All he's got to do is go to that bus stop and wait for some hotties to get dropped off. Dude, you're nailing chicks in the back of a cab in no time at all. No, you want to go beat off behind a mirror, you weirdo. What the hell is your problem? All right, so that's kind of fucked up. And that's exactly what happens. They get checked in. Everybody's showering and, you know, getting ready for bed. This chick's in her own room on the first floor. El Pervo, the hotel clerk, goes down and starts watching her get naked. Now, you don't see him beating off, but you know damn well he is. Weirdo. She wasn't even that hot. I don't know what he was thinking. Anyway, that's kind of nutty. From there, we get into the next day. Andreas takes him around, puts him on one of those romantic pergola things. Is that what they're called? The big boats with the guys and all that. Pretty good times. Everything's going pretty smoothly. They get to the following night. They get on the pergola thing because Andreas wants to show them some fucking attraction that they can only see at night. So they're on there. They're in the pergola thing. They're going down the canal ways. This fucking Scuba Steve guy shows up again. And, you know, he's in the catacombs doing his what for with the hood and talking to these dead bitches. Sure as shit, pops up underneath one of these fucking pergolas, grabs the chick out of the boat that was the one that was getting beat off to by the creepy hotel guy. Snatches her right up into the canal way. She's gone. History. All right, now Andreas is starting to get pissed. He's like, dude, she was on the boat. She's off the boat. That's like the fifth or sixth hot chick that's gotten snatched up in the last couple of weeks. Dude, something ain't happening here. Something's going down. I don't know what it is. So he goes and talks to the police. One detective on the police force is actually listening to him and thinks he's may be onto something. But in order for him to get approval, they need to go to the commissioner and talk to that guy. Now, as I stated before, this commissioner does not give a shit. They actually have to interrupt his lunch, and he's having like a big well-to-do lunch with a bunch of his commissioner cohorts. I don't know what any of these guys are doing, but they're all wearing suits and stuff, so they must be important. They go in there and they're like, hey, commissioner, look, here's a map. Here's where all the disappearances are. They're all around this area. We think that somebody could be jacking these girls. Andreas over here says that, you know, one of them fell off a boat last night. And the commissioner just keeps going on about, oh, they're just runaways. Oh, it's a boating accident. They'll turn up. She eloped with somebody. Blah, 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 blah. He really doesn't give a shit. So Andreas is now seriously fired up. And he's sick of hot chicks disappearing in Venice. Because apparently they don't just fly in every day. Actually, they do. They do fly in every day. He's like, you know what? I'm going to retire, or I'm gonna quit my job at the paper, and I'm going to find this motherfucker. Because this dude is jacking hot bitches, and I can't have that. So he quits his job at the paper. And as he's quitting, he's walking out of the door. He runs into his two drunk friends. And the drunk friends, again, hit him with this story about a fish with a light on its head. So he's like, what are you talking about? A fish with a light on its head? That doesn't make any sense. Then he starts thinking about the shit that he saw just before the hot chick got jacked off the pergola. Is that the correct term? Pergola? What are those boats called? I'm going to feel like a great big idiot if I'm calling what... I'm just going to type it in. Pergola. Hit it. Images. That is not a... That's a cabana. You know, I don't know what those fucking boats are called, but you know what I'm talking about. They're big and they're long, and the Italian guys drive them. They use, like, big sticks. One of those fucking boats, all right? Don't give me any shit. Anyway... He's like, that's what I thought I saw something like that right before that chick got jacked off the boat. So he gets with his drunk friends. He makes them sober up and quit fighting amongst each other for a minute. He's like, all right, show me where the fish with the lamp on its head came from and which direction it went. So they're like, well, you can only see it at night. Come back around this time. It'll come out again. So, okay, that makes sense. At this point, though, the professor, the hottie professor, is back at the hotel with the girls, and she's waiting on word from the police as to her missing girl that got jacked off the boat. Okay, that makes sense. She goes down to get the girl's stuff out of the room on the first floor with a tricked-out mirror. She's in there, and she's, like, getting all of her bags together. She turns the light off and she sees one of the bellhops cleaning the opposite side of the goddamn mirror. Now she's fucking pissed. Because not only did her student get abducted, but there was clearly somebody beating off to her on the other side of the goddamn mirror. So she's fired up now. She goes out there to the front desk. The creepy dude that checked him in isn't working there anymore. And she's like, hey, where's that fucking creepy guy that checked us in? I know there was a reason he put her down here. She's trying to beat off to her. So the guy that works there, he's like, oh, that guy? Yeah, he's in his apartment. It's apparently the apartment is attached to the building or something like that. So this professor bitch grows a pair of balls, and she goes marching right up to the dude's apartment. Knocks three times, nobody answers. Tries the doorknob, door swings right open. So she does what all chicks do, goes right in and starts going through his stuff. She's like looking around. There's nothing out of the ordinary. I mean, it's a really nice apartment, actually, for a guy that works at front desk at a hotel. She goes in there. She starts snooping around, looking through stuff. While that's going on, Andreas is now hooked up with his two drunk buddies, and he's now swimming around the canals trying to find out where this fish with the lamp on its head keeps coming out. Now, if you haven't done the math yet, inmates, there's not a fish with a lamp on its head. It's fucking Scuba Steve, and that's where he's taking the dead chicks in so he can put them in the sex doll cabinet. So that's bad business, dude. But the good news is that Andreas is on the case, and once he finds the opening to that antechamber or catacomb system or whatever the hell it is, then we're money. You know, he'll be ready to go. She's back at the creepy hotel guy's apartment. She's looking around, going through the bookcases, flipping things and sniffing objects. I don't know what she's doing. Sure as shit, she gets looking around the bookcase there, pulls the correct book in the right direction, and pops open a secret passage. All right, secret passageway to this guy's shitty apartment. She starts moseying down there, and I mean, you know, it's your atypical secret passage. It's like a spiral staircase, bunch of cobwebs and shit. At some point, she has to fire up one of those hand torch thingies, and she's using that to light her way. You know, that's a good sign, right? So she's getting down there into the murky depths. Cut back to Andreas. His drunk buddies are fucking around with him, trying to get him to the right spot where the fish comes out, where Scuba Steve comes out. Finally, he gets it, and he manages to snorkel his way into the catacombs there. Now, while both of these people are basically headed to the same area, and that's where Scuba Steve and all of his dead chicks is getting... He's got one spot left in the sex doll cabinet, and he needs one more hot chick to stick in there. So he's like got this grand, and he's yelling at these dead girls. He's like, I need one more. You're all so beautiful. I'm just going to love you all forever, and you will be mine, and all this horse shit. As Andreas and the professor are converging on his antechamber, he's dropping the robe, and he's about to get his Scuba Steve outfit on. He starts disrobing. That's when the professor comes in. Now, mind you, this professor is a hot chick. So I think the math on the Scuba Steve guy was that I was going to go get a hot chick and stick her in there. This one happened into my little love dungeon here, so she'll do for now. Why don't I just take this one? Save me some time and trouble. Makes sense. That's perfect. So they kind of, you know, there's a little bit of a struggle. He overpowers her, and he knocks her out, and he's getting ready to start the embalming process. That's when Andreas comes up through the shit water there. I don't know. The canal way, whatever the fuck it is. I don't know. He comes up with a snorkel on, and then the monk guy turns around. He's not in Scuba Steve apparel yet, but he turns around and he spots Andreas, and they start fighting. And the good news is that he didn't actually start the embalming of the professor. But they start fighting and rolling around and punching at each other and stuff like that. Eventually, Andreas is putting a pretty good ass whipping on this dude. So the monk guy manages to break free, and he goes hauling ass up the stairs that the professor came down into the creepy hotel guy's apartment. Now, at this point in the movie, you're led to believe that the creepy hotel guy is the embalmer, or at least that's where I was at this point. Andreas goes chasing after him. They go running through the apartment. They go running through the hotel. They knock over a bunch of people. This guy's still got his monkhood thing on, so you can't see his face or who he really is. They go running. Now they're like out in the streets of Venice, and the sun's coming up. It's early morning. And he's just chasing him block after block. Finally, he catches up to him. Andreas does. Trips him, jumps on him, starts punching him around a little bit. The monk guy gets on top of Andreas and starts choking him out. So it's looking for a minute there like, you know, this is going to be the end of Andreas. But then you hear some shots ring out, and it turns out that the friend, Andreas's detective friend, was following him the whole time. And he shot the monk guy. Once the monk guy is dead and he gets Andreas to safety, they pull the robe back and you find out it was one of the commissioner's highfalutin friends from the power lunch there. And that was one of the guys that was telling the commissioner not to worry about these chicks disappearing. Slimy motherfucker. That's pretty much your movie, man. I got a kill count of 5 on this. I mean, it's black and white. It's public domain. It's 1965. This is an Italian movie dubbed in English. If you can get past all of that, it's not a bad show. It's your atypical giallo. A lot of hot chicks getting killed. Some weird sex stuff going on. Maybe more implied than actually shown. But and then, of course, the bon vivant type who's going to come in and save the day at the end. Not bad. I mean, the thing about these public domain movies is that it's more, in my opinion, something to just have on. You know what I mean? Like, if you're doing housework and you don't want to watch The View, you want to have some kind of horror, you're in a horror kind of mood, but you don't want to get involved in a movie, just throw one of these fucking things on. These make great party movies, and they make great, like, drunken heckling movies, too. So there's that. I say give it a shot. It was in my Pure Terror box set. Disc 6, Side A. If anybody really wants to see it. Or, the good news about these public domain movies, every single one of these fucking things is on YouTube. So if you go to YouTube, just type in the Embalmer from 1965. Boom. There you have it, my friends. That was it. The Embalmer. Let's take a break, huh?
Thank you.
And I'm back. Did you miss me? I missed you, honeys. Oh, Jesus Christ. That's what happens when you have a baby. You see there? You start talking like a fucking idiot all the time. Oh, little babies. No. Yeah. If I go off... Dude, seriously. If I go off the deep end, somebody needs to hit me up on listener mail and be like, hey, get multiple mics back in there or something, because you're losing it, dude. Don't be afraid to tell me, all right? I won't take it personal, I promise. All right, you motherfuckers. Let's see here. We need a Padded Room podcast Twitter follow of the week. You know, I was thinking, in honor of the Giallo, why don't we see if Dario's on here, huh? Dario Argento? Let's check him out. I know that his daughter is on here because she's been known to tweet. Should we just do Asia instead? Let's do Asia. Asia Argento. Asia at Asia Argento. I don't know how, man, I don't know. I don't mind telling you, I have expunged quite a bit to on around and because of Asia Argento. She's fucking hot, but in a weird kind of, I almost feel like I could fuck her if I ever met her kind of a way. I know I couldn't. She's way too, I don't know. She's on Vine. You guys do the Vine at all? Do you know what Vine is? Vine is a social media app that lets you post little 6-second videos. And that's all you can do. You just videos. And I follow her on Vine, and she is fucking crazy. Like, every Vine that she posts is just her screaming into her phone. And then there's, like, weird, like, another one of her getting blood drawn for some reason. I don't know what that's all about. It's kind of, I don't know. I think I could still beat off to her, but I don't know that I'd want to. I could probably have sex with her. I don't know that I would want to date her. I probably would, because I'd want to meet her dad, but I don't know, man. I don't know. She's just kind of funky. I feel like I'd wake up one night and she'd be standing at the foot of the bed, naked, you know, staring at me. And probably chain smoking or something. Like, I don't know. I don't know. Forget it. Forget the whole thing. Asia Argento, you are the Padded Room Podcast Twitter follow of the week. Hey, how about some pterodome business, huh? I kind of feel like fighting. Getting my combat on here. Let's do that. Oh, excuse me. Sorry about the allergies, ladies. I took an allergy pill. But like I mentioned last week, I feel like the cat hair is like embedded in my fucking nasal cavities, and I'm probably just going to be jacked up like this for a couple of weeks. Pterodome. It's time. First, last week's winners. In singles competition, we had the Tall Man from the Phantasm franchise versus Chrome Skull from the Laid to Rest franchise. Story continues. The dead bodies of the young women were found throughout the mortuary halls. The one with the knife had apparently corralled them in some macabre hide-and-seek game. By the time the Tall Man had finished, they all found spots on his tables, the Chrome Skull as well. With a vote of 9-4, the Tall Man advances over Chrome Skull. I kind of saw that one coming. I like Chrome Skull, don't get me wrong, as a run-of-the-mill slasher. But when you get into the later rounds and you're going up against supernatural shit, like the Tall Man, you're not going to do much. All you got is a knife, dude. What are you doing? Get out of there. Can't be fighting the Tall Man. He's got balls. In teams competition, we had the Predators versus Demons. The story continues. The burns and the scars were all treatable. The pain would subside, but the glory would last a lifetime. The horned skull trophies on the trophy rack would tell tales of heroics for generations to come. With a vote of 10-3, the Predators advance over the Demons.
I had a feeling that was going to go that way. Who's going to beat the Predators at this point? Xenomorphs. That's it. That's our only shot, kids. I don't see anybody else doing it. Killer clowns? No. Birds? I think it's got to be the Xenos. I don't know who else is even in their neighborhood, really. Let's get into this week's matchups. Back in the Inferno Conference. Here we are. As usual, inmates, bear with me. I am not a writer. Whoops. Humans were far from worthy prey, by and large. Only from the ranks of their greatest warriors were the targets worthy of the hunt. The hunters would descend from the stars and watch in silence as human conflict would force great warriors and leaders to emerge. And in the earthen year of 1472, a great and tyrannical warrior emerged from what would become the Fourth Crusade. From the sacred order of the dragon arose a knight of such cruel ferocity that the Ottoman Turks and all of Christendom would revere his name. Vlad Tepes III was slaughtering invading Turks by the thousands, often leaving the wounded and dying to rot amongst forests of impaled prisoners writhing on stakes of agony. Vlad the Impaler was a human far and beyond worthy the hunter's attention. In singles competition, we have Dracula versus the Predator. Dude, and now I know everybody's going to take the Predator on this one. I'm going to be bold, and I'm going to go against the grain. And it's not just because I want to see Gracie's Poppy lose. I like that guy. I hope he, well, GP, you know I love you. But I don't know about this Predator business. I'm taking Dracula in this one, and I'll tell you why. Everybody points to the Predator's technology, right? That thermal vision shit, that's not going to work. Dracula's dead. He doesn't put out any body heat, okay? That prism cloaking device, that's not going to work either. Dracula has heightened senses. He's going to smell you, okay? That net doohickey, the razor wire net thing, that's not going to work on him either. He's going to turn into mist. What else? The laser blast thing, that's not a wooden stake, my friend. I might be reaching a little bit right there, but it's still not a wooden stake, all right? What else you got there? I'm taking Dracula on this one. I'll probably be standing alone, but I am taking Dracula over the Predator. Let's take a look at teams competition. This one's a little weird. Excuse me. When the Nazis finally caught up to André Toulon, he had again been one step ahead of them. They missed him again, but not by much. He'd eluded them, but was forced to abandon a lot of his research and experimentation. The workshop they'd discovered was dusty and full of arcane relics of a bygone era. It would all have to be inventoried, cataloged, and carefully shipped back to headquarters in Berlin. In one dark corner, an empty steamer trunk sat. Apparently, the puppet master had managed to escape with the puppets. There wasn't so much as a scrap of miniature clothing inside. On an old drawing board lay a very odd-looking book, bound in extremely old leather and with a hideous contorted face covering the front cover. The first page identifies the book as Necronomicon Ex Mortis, the Book of the Dead. If the Nazis spoke Latin, they might have stopped reading the incantations. And if they hadn't been reading the incantations, they may have heard the tiny footfalls racing across the workshop floor toward them. In teams competition, we have the Deadites versus the Puppet Master Dolls. This one's a little bit more tricky. I think I will take the... I mean, Deadites have numbers, right? But the Puppet Master Dolls have the stealth. This one's tricky. I think I am going to... I'm going to go Deadites. I can't tell you why exactly, because, I don't know, it just feels right. And when it feels right, you got to go with what feels right. Taking the Deadites in that one, dude. Those are your Terra Dome matches for the week. In singles competition, we have Dracula versus the Predator. And in teams competition, we have Deadites versus the Puppet Master Dolls. As usual, inmates, get me your votes by next Sunday. I shan't be late this week. The mental health hotline is 206-309-9117, or you can email them to me at thepaddedroom2011@hotmail.com, or you can tweet them to me if you like, but you got to follow me first. At paddedroompod is the way to go there. That being said, let's get into a little what are you looking at?
What are you looking at?
What the hell was that? I got a few things this week, just a few. Sleep Tight from 2011. Have you heard of this one? Spanish film made in Barcelona. Interesting. I'll give it that. Basically, what you have here is a Spanish apartment building, kind of like the one you see in Rec. But you have a concierge guy there that's more or less a doorman and a Mr. Fix-It type. And he is kind of stalking one of the tenants. Now, by stalking, I don't mean... You're given the impression that all he does is sleep under the bed that she sleeps on top of. And then periodically get out while she's asleep, chloroform her, and then just kind of crawl in bed next to her. Which is kind of romantic in a weird way. the shit, of course, gets fucked up from there. And there's a much more malicious twist towards the end. And you'll figure that out if you ever choose to watch it. It's not a bad show. You kind of feel almost bad for the concierge guy. Because... I mean, I don't want to give too much away, but he doesn't appear to be like, he's not that malicious. And really, I don't know. I don't want to give too much. Check it out if you get a chance. Sleep Tight from 2011. You can get it on Netflix. The next one is Stacy from 2001. I have a question. If anybody has an answer, what the hell's wrong with Japanese people? What is going on over there, Japan? What's going on with these movies, huh? What's happening? What is the preoccupation with adolescent girls? That's what I'd like to know, Japan. A little creepy over there. Let me give you a little synopsis of this here, Stacy. What happens is, when girls hit a certain prepubescent age, they hit a bliss-like state, and this is a worldwide pandemic in this movie. They hit a bliss-like state and then immediately turn into zombies. So basically what you have is teenage girl zombies running around, and then you have these squads of paramilitary types called repeat killers, and they're running around putting down the zombies, and then you have like mercenary squads that are like underground repeat killers that will do it for much cheaper. I'm as much into that Catholic schoolgirl look as the next guy, but I don't think I need it shoved up my ass to this level. What's going on over there? I don't get it. Is there some kind of hidden subtext to this movie that eluded me? I don't know. I'm going to write it off as a cultural difference. It's just too fucking weird, dude. What the fuck is going on in Japan with the schoolgirls? What's going on? I don't know. Check it out if you want to see some schoolgirl zombies, I suppose. That's all I'm looking at. Let's get into a little immersion therapy.
Immersion therapy.
Okay, so last week we watched Torment from 2014. Not a bad show. It's a pretty run-of-the-mill home invasion situation. A little bit of a twist at the end. Basically, you have these stuffed animal-looking home invaders, and they're going after people's kids, apparently. You're kind of led to believe that, I don't know, like maybe they want to eat the kid or something like that. But then towards the middle, they kind of swing it towards they want to indoctrinate this little guy and make him one of their family. They keep referring to him as little brother, and they more or less torture the father into telling the little boy that he hates him and that he doesn't love him anymore and he was a mistake. That part was pretty creepy. Catherine Isabel's in there, and you do get to see some side boob. You really got to look for it, though. And believe me, I was really looking for it. It's not a bad show. I mean, it's nothing to write home about either. There's not a lot of originality there. Your immersion therapy for this week is Cabin Fever Patient Zero from 2014, starring Sean Astin and Cary Grant, directed by Care Andrews. A lot of mixed reviews on this one. Yeah, I loved Cabin Fever, the original. I could not bring myself to watch the second one because I heard zero good about it. I mean, even Ty West himself, who directed it, removed his name from it, and Alan Smithied it, which is, that's not a good sign, right? If the actual director doesn't want credit for it, then how good could it possibly be? But I am willing to forego that and check this third one out. You never know, it might be a new invention of the Cabin Fever franchise. So let's check it out. Cabin Fever Patient Zero. That's your immersion therapy for this week. Let's do a little Company of Wolves, huh? Dude, I am just full of gas today. What the fuck? Too much dancing last night. Dancing makes me gassy, I found.
The Company of Wolves.
Yeah. So you heard it from the horse himself. It sounds like Brenna has got herself a cross-country challenge coming up. Now, excuse me. That's coming up this Tuesday, the 7th, right? Yeah, 7th. I told her I'd match it. However far she runs, I'll run that far too. But then I found out that her cross-country group only runs like 1 mile at a time. So my second challenge was that I would double it. Then I realized that that's only 2 miles. So basically, I told Brenna to tell me how far I'm going to run on Tuesday. And I think we're kind of negotiating it right now. We started at 20 miles. I got her down to 10. So I think I can do 10 on a Tuesday, weather permitting. I shan't be backing down from this one. I know Brenna won't, and if I do, I'm going to catch a face full of shit from Irma Gersh next week. So, let's keep Brenna in our thoughts and send her some motivation via Facebook or whatever. That's good stuff, man. I like it when Brenna gets out there and does something, because it makes me feel like a big fat loser. And whenever I feel like a big fat loser, then I start lacing up my running shoes and getting things done. And it's good to feel like a fat loser every now and then. I'm all for shaming. By all means, shame me. Because if you don't, then I'm not going to do shit except play video games. So by all means, shame away. I think that's about it. I think I hear my in-laws pulling up. So let's go ahead and call this an episode. Oh, for the Padded Room Podcast, my name is Darian. I'm afraid visiting hours are over.